This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for April 29th, 2020. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find our podcast alongside the whole network on the RSS feed or at voicesofwrestling.com. And we have our own Open the Voice Gate RSS feed, and we are available on all the podcast apps and platforms of choice. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. I'm joined as always by Case, but we have a special guest today. We are joined live from Japan, Dragon Gate Jay. Jay, thanks so much for joining us.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, as things are kind of like have slowed down to basically a halt right now, and you put out a kind of a fortuitous tweet yesterday, things came together pretty quickly for us to record. And I think like the last time that you've done an episode of VoiceGate when John was all around, it was like 3 years ago, talking about heel units, just general history stuff. I think the idea, in case you're more than able to correct me on this, we're just going to talk about random things that have popped up and how your experiences have been with the company, especially now that you've moved to, it's not as actually on camera, but as a commentator within Dragon Gate.
Yeah, I have never spoken via podcasting platform with Jay before. And since 2013, I've probably read a tweet or from the former iHeartDG website, I've probably read Jay's words every single day since then. And every 6 months, Jay gets a strange email from me when I have a Dragon System question that Mike can't answer and that Alan Forel can't answer. That's when I turn to Jay. So I'm excited. I just have a bunch of general questions for Jay. And I guess we can start off because it was just announced that the shows leading into May, and we're taping this on April 28th, that all of the May shows are canceled. We've only really had the empty arena shows since Champion Gate at the end of February, beginning of March. Jay, since you started running Toriumon USA into what became iHeartDG and now the Dragon Gate English Facebook, have you ever had this much time off from the company?
No, not really. Aside from brief period in 2009 where I quit doing everything for about a month. Otherwise, no. I mean, there's still stuff to do in terms of, you know, when new stuff goes up on the network or if new, like Dragon Gate Records has been starting to put stuff up on iTunes and Apple Music and the other streaming platforms. So aside from doing that, I mean, this is the first time I haven't had to post results, you know, at least three times a week since the 90s at this point.
that's insane. I mean, that's something that you are the reason we're here, because, you know, I've been leeching information from you for 7 years now. This podcast largely exists because you've been able to provide translations. And I guess just to transition into your origins, but specifically with Toriumon, you know, this past year was the Dragon Gate 20th anniversary. And at the start of this year, there was the anniversary show that you were on commentary for. What was that experience like getting to call the Toriumon anniversary show?
In terms of the, you know, the commentary gig isn't, you know, a lot of people are saying, wow, this is like a dream come true and everything, right? And not as much, but the Toriumon show definitely was. It was pretty surreal. We were at dinner in Fukuoka around during for Final Gate, and we were talking about, you know, I was talking with Horiguchi about the Torimon show, and I said, yeah, I'd love to do commentary on this. And it kind of got passed around the table, and I didn't think anything was going to come of it. But then the decision was made that we wanted to do Korakuen Hall every month. And since the Torimon show was close to the February Korakuen Hall show, it would have made it made sense to bring Larry in a week early and do both shows. So it was cool. I mean, got to call an M2K match. I got to call Milano Collection's comeback. I mean, like I said it during the broadcast, that this is something. This is a show I've basically called in my house playing Fire Pro, you know, so many times over the last 20 years. So it was something really special. I mean, if I don't get to do commentary ever again, because the world never recovers from this and wrestling never comes back, I still have come out of it with a pretty good memory.
And I have to imagine that doing commentary and having just like a moment like Milano's doing things in a ring, especially given like how he's kind of been more focused on doing stuff with like Bushiroad, he's now head coach of Stardom, and his normal New Japan gigs, like having him like show up there, like the response at least watching it was insane just on the screen. I can only imagine, like in Korakuen Hall, like was it, did the overall feeling about this, it was like partly, at least my assumption is partly surprise, partly like just exhilaration. How was it for you to see that sort of comeback?
Well, what made it cool was they had done the Italian Connection match already. So since that was over, you figure there was no opening for there to be any other surprises for him to come back. You know, they had Milanito out there, they had the music, the actual main event of the show was over. So that people were, you know, they got to see Taru, they got to see some other kind of cool stuff, but the show up until that point was, I don't know, what could I say? It was just kind of what it was on paper, you know, going in, like, this is the list of names of people who are going to be here. And we got what we expected. It was cool, but it wasn't like anything super memorable. But then, you know, you get the big comeback at the end, and you know, he was the one name out of the guys that were, that could come back, that came back, and he was the guy that people wanted to see. I mean, he was concerned that people wouldn't remember him, but people remembered him.
Jay, can you speak to a little bit of the 20th anniversary celebration that lasted for all of 2019? You had Sugawara come back, Shuji Kondo came back, which, you know, I never thought I would see Kondo back in a Dragon Gate ring, let alone Ultimo Dragon. Is this something, if we would have asked you this, you know, a year and a half ago, could you have ever envisioned Ultimo coming back to the company for one match, let alone his now, you know, full-time role?
Well, if you asked me in the first 3 months of 2018, I would have said no. If you asked me anytime after May 6th, 2018, I would say anything is possible.
Yeah, I remember all this stuff happening in 2018, and I think this was probably the time I was most in Jay's email box going, I've heard certain things from certain wrestlers, certain guys in saying this.
And yeah.
It was a wild time.
I mean, there was a company line that had to be towed at the time. So, you know, information didn't get out, but, you know, I think now that enough time has passed, we all know it's pretty obvious what happened, and we're much better off for it.
So that was 2 years. Oh yeah. Sorry, Mike. We're coming up on 2 years to the day. Can you maybe explain the differences behind the scenes since, you know, certain camps have split away from the company? What has changed in Dragon Gate in the past 2 years?
This is one of those, what can I say? the mental health of the company is much better than it was, because the leadership is much more sound and grounded now. I'm going to go way off topic and tell an Okamura story.
Sure thing.
But, this is way off topic, and I just wanted to give kind of an example of what kind of person Okamura was, is that he would get into these periods of time where, like, if a wrestler wasn't performing well or if they were in a slump, he would become convinced that they were possessed by demons and the demons were living in their back. So he would bring them into the dojo or his office. I'm not exactly sure the exact place, but he would do, like, not like, I don't want to say a seance, because I don't know if that's the right word, but he would perform like a ritual where he would, like, whip them to exorcise the demons out, an exorcism to get the demons out of their back.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard plenty of Okamura stories through the years, and especially like this, but that's especially seeing, like, we're talking about mental health, I could definitely see how the threat of having exorcisms being out of the picture definitely calms people down.
At the end of the day, it's a money thing. And, you know, when people get in, when certain people have, you know, it was his company.
Right.
It's the only way to say it. And when it's your company, you can do what you want with the money.
And it also would seem like, at least like business wise, it was, decisions would be made on a certain basis because it was his money, and not wanting to take certain chances or pulling. I mean, Case and I kind of have been doing a series of the last few months to keep ourselves entertained, rewatching Dragon Gate USA. A lot of that was like his money sending people out there. Now you don't, like, if it's your money, you're the person that's going to say, like, I'm not seeing what I want to see out of it. We're not doing this anymore. And that doesn't seem
well,
to be
that
the case.
Was Dragon Gate USA. I mean, a lot of it became, you know, it, not just his money, but in general, it became too expensive to fly out. You know, this was 2009, 2010, around the time that gas prices spiked up, which caused airfare to spike up. So it wasn't worth it to fly all these guys out there because you weren't going to make the money back. So at that point, you know, the concept began to die on the vine, and it ended up turning into a couple Dragon Gate guys on a US indie show.
Yeah.
Jay, real quick, Mike, just because we are doing the DGUSA rewatch series, Jay, do you have any strong memories, good or bad, of Dragon Gate USA as a whole?
I mean, I went to the first show in Philly. I went to, drove down with a buddy of mine, and it was cool. I mean, like, I didn't particularly get along with Gabe all that much.
That's a reoccurring theme on this show as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, in the end, like, I ended up forging a pretty good relationship with the actual Dragon Gate USA president. His name was Satoshi Oji. He was a guy based out of Houston. He was, like, the main contact down there, where, you know, like, when Takagi was staying in Houston, you know, it was through that connection. I ended up becoming pretty good friends with him, and through that ended up, you know, because he was President Kido. No, he, at the time he was, you know, Mr. Kido, who's company president now. OG was like his pick, so like I ended up becoming friends with Mr. Kido through that. So in the end, Dragon Gate USA helped really give me a path into, you know, becoming involved with Dragon Gate in Japan. So for that, you know, without Dragon Gate USA, then, you know, that probably wouldn't have happened. So that's a pretty good plus. I also had fun at the shows in Atlanta on the one WrestleMania weekend. I don't remember what year it was. It was 2011, because it was during Junction 3 versus Blood Warriors.
Right.
Those are fun shows.
Yeah, I got to work the, we had like a charity table, because the 311 earthquake just happened in Japan, so we were selling stickers for charity. So I got to hang out at the table with Stalker Ichikawa, and this guy came over and was like, it's my birthday and I want to get chopped by a Japanese wrestler. So Stalker Ichikawa chopped him really hard. The guy cried.
Was that the hardest chop that Stalker Ichikawa ever gave in his career?
No comment.
What's Stalker like behind the scenes? Because maybe it has something to do with regime change, maybe it doesn't, but it seems like Stalker is maybe given more respect now than he ever has been.
He's a nice, Ichikawa's a very humble and nice guy. You know, having certain people gone will turn up the level of respect for pretty much everybody in the company. So,
I've heard stories of bus trips with people in Ichikawa, so I could totally understand now that there's not as many worries of that as well. And I think about...
Yeah, well, I mean, Mr. Don Fuji is still around, so...
I have to say, on the Empty Arena shows, especially the one that happened earlier this month, where Don Fuji just kind of made a point just to deck Ichikawa each time he could, just had me crack up, just like going like, of course Don Fuji is doing this. Like, this is the most Don Fuji thing possible. Genki Horiguchi is trying to be like a idol fan, but Don Fuji is just going to be Don Fuji.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter, even though they're on the same team, you know, you should go and pick on Punch, and then you could have somebody from the other side can come and pick on Ichikawa. But
do you know how the wrestlers are doing by not working? Because I would imagine Don Fuji is having all sorts of issues, maybe not being able to hit as many bars as he would normally do.
Don Fuji actually, he does like to drink, but he's a super big fan of watching train videos. It's they call it tetsudo in Japanese, which is like appreciation of like the rail system. And I have to, there's somebody at my door, so hang on, I'm gonna mute this for a second.
Oh no,
sorry.
I actually remember like when Don Fuji went on to Twitter case, and he wasn't able to post tweets because he was watching videos. And I remember one of them was, like, he talked about, like, a train video, and then there was a basho going on at that time. And I was like, oh, you know, that makes sense. Don Fuji would really like to watch train videos.
God, I love him. I love Don Fuji so much.
the image of him in his glasses on the bus watching train videos makes me very, very happy right now. So, no.
That's fantastic.
Jeez, I forgot about 311, and that would have been around the main time, because remember, I know that that was such a big thing, especially I know Horiguchi was doing a lot of stuff around his area for
events. Sorry, okay guys, I'm back.
Oh no worries.
Oh, you're good.
I was just mentioning to Case about how I remember when Don Fuji went on Twitter and he said, oh, I'm out of data for this month because I was watching Basho videos. And I was like, no, it makes sense. He's also watching train videos as well.
Yeah, there's actually, if you go in on the Dragon Gate Network, and there's like that series where the guys are introducing all their finishing holds and like their signature moves and kind of explaining the background on it. Fuji has a series of them on there, but they also have one where they ask him about his hobbies, and he goes like into in depth about his love of the train system and his love of trains. Like, it's a shoot hobby.
If I ever make it to Japan and meet Don Fuji, I'm gonna make sure I'm gonna go like bring like a small Amtrak car for him, like one of those like little model ones, because I feel like that would be the right idea to get on in his good books, because he's someone that terrifies
yeah
me.
It would probably pop him. Yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit about the network, and we've seen how the network has really grown over the last, I would say, 6 months, and especially with like this Dragon Gate, with the Toriumon Generation series, like each of them like picking one of their matches. I know Case and I have both really gone back and did this. I'm someone who has worked as an archivist before, so I'm going off script a little bit there. Do you know exactly what happens for them to get the footage this clear for like 99 through like 2004? Because I have not seen any like Wrestling Network be able to have stuff that looks like it's essentially remastered from what I guess would be the master tapes from Gayora.
Yeah, I don't know.
I figured I'd shoot my shot and ask, because I've been wondering about this a lot over the last few weeks.
No, you have to remember, we've never actually seen the master footage, so we don't know what it looked like when it aired on TV.
Oh sure.
Because, you know, the first time we saw it would have, you know, if we saw it in 1999, it would have been on a VHS tape, which is going to immediately downgrade. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, especially like with the SP and LPs, like they would be trying to record as much as they can, and then the transfers over from the VHSs to the DVDs. Like, I can get all into the technical differences between that, but it was something that kind of like piqued my mind when I especially I rewatched Darkness Dragon versus DK, the Puestas match, and I was like,
yeah, I don't think that ever existed anywhere. And I think the tape that made the rounds that would have been, you know, the source tape for everybody was shit to begin with. So,
oh, absolutely. I was like, I could see parts of this arena that I was never able to see before when I saw the show. It was just an insane thing, especially like noticing the final stretch with Kid keeping his mask between his teeth was something I never noticed before. And I was like, I'm really happy about having the footage there, or having the footage upgrade to this level. That I think that's weirdly enough been like a selling point when people have asked me about the network. It's like, no, remember like the really bad tapes that went around? Nah, this is like mastered stuff. So it was something I figured I'd ask.
And now that we have about 2.5 years worth of Toriumon on there for people to watch, it's a little bit more of a selling point than it was a year ago. And it's like, well, you can watch 1999, but now, you know, you're getting actually, we're past numero uno and everything now. So we're into like the real hot period of Toriumon.
Jay, is there anything that you would recommend a new fan that has maybe come into the company in the past few years that has never really seen Toriumon? Is there anything on the network right now that you would really recommend they go out of their way to watch?
Well, like just mentioned, you know, the Darkness Dragon versus Dragon Kid mask match is generally considered the best singles match from the Toriumon era, at least from the Japanese fan side. It might be kind of weird to watch it without context.
Sure.
And the same thing for like the El Numero Uno 2003 finals is up there now as Horiguchi's match. And that's another one that, like, as a match, it's fine, but like it doesn't work as much without the entire show.
Right. You'd want to see all the lead up to that.
Yeah, but in terms of like individual matches that are up or things that you could see now, this month's Toriumon episode was the first El Numero Uno finals, which works very well as a standalone show because it starts with the Battle Royal and with Mochizuki winning out of the Battle Royal, and then he goes through and you've got like the dream matches, you know, like you've got him against Shima, and then you've got Magnum against Suwa, which are basically the two, you know, the four top guys from Toriumon, you know, having singles matches. And then you get the big, you know, the finals between Mochizuki and Magnum, which sets up Mochizuki as the big, like the monster villain for the rest of the year. So that is absolutely worth watching. God, what else got picked on the, I have to go and look and see what else got picked.
I know that the Mochizuki contra Mochizuki match is up as well.
Yeah, Mochizuki contra Mochizuki is up there. That is Masaki Mochizuki against, he was Susumu Mochizuki at the time. I have a pinned, if you check my personal Twitter, I have a pinned thread that has an episode guide to all the episodes that are up there with some mentioning like the must-see matches. Okay, from episode 6, which would be the September 14th, 1999 episode, there was a Susumu against Horiguchi match, which was like just like an astonishingly great opening match. And it was the first Toriumon match that people sat up and took notice that didn't involve any of the guys that were like involved in the first elimination match, like the Crazy Max and the Magnum Dragon Kid, like from that class.
Mm-hmm.
So that match is worth going out of your way to see. What else? There is a 6-man on from January of 2000 from the Korakuen Hall show. It's Crazy Max against Dragon Kid, Magnum Tokyo, and I think Tiger Mask. That like that match ended up like they cut that match down and basically turned it into the intro for the show because it had so many crazy highlights.
Yeah, I think that was like one of the ones that was they used highlights into that like well into Toriumon 2000 project as well. Like they still like
the yeah that. Yeah. Gosh, what else?
I know they uploaded the opener from World 2004. That was the Super Shisa pick for his top match, which is like it's inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, but as an opening 6-man of that style, it is as good as it gets.
Yeah. They actually now have World from, you know, Kobe World from every year is up. They were up for free for a while, but they're only for subscribers now. But there's a lot of stuff from, like you can go into 2003. There is the UWA Trios match from World 2003, which is like the best trios match ever. There's the three-way from World 2002, which is like one of the prototype matches for, you know, the three-way six-mans are more of a common occurrence in modern Dragon Gate now, but this is one of the prototype matches. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, it's, if you're a new Dragon Gate fan and like you're really into Dragon Gate but haven't seen much of Torimon, I mean, since there's no new stuff coming out, I mean, there's really no reason not to just start at the beginning and watch everything that's up there, because you can get to see, you know, the growth and the different, the different stages of these guys' careers, and some guys that you don't see anymore, guys like Magnum Tokyo, guys like Sua, who were gone before, you know, most people got into it. You know, you figure even if you put the ROH six man as a jumping on point for a lot of people, Magnum and Sua were both gone by then. So I guess Magnum was still around for another 6 months, but like you didn't see peak proper non-bloated corpse Magnum. So
people didn't really need to watch much of the Renaissance era to begin with.
I watched some stuff from 2006 not too long ago, like as treadmill fodder, and like just the dance was just so lazy.
And it's actually kind of funny, like, contrasting that with, like, the last months of Hulk doing the dance before he dropped it. And maybe it is watching it in the DGUSA versions where it's whoever Gabe Sapolsky was able to grab. But we just actually tonight finished talking about the WrestleMania 2010 shows where it's just Hulk going through the motions with a girl behind him just pacing back and forth and clapping. And you can tell pretty like much that he was completely done with it by early 2010.
Yeah, I think they made him come back and do one more dance in Dragon Gate USA after he had lost his hair.
Mm-hmm.
And had, I don't, because there, like, the timing was that he was going into the hair match with Shingo that year, where that was when he stopped dancing. And I think there was a Dragon Gate USA show like right after World.
Would that have been Hulk was the anniversary show? DGOSA anniversary?
It would have to be, yeah, because it would have had to have been the July show.
Right.
So, like, Hulk would have been there with, like, a shaved head dancing after he had announced that he wasn't going to dance anymore in Japan. Continuity. DGOSA was all about continuity.
It's funny, like, the small things that were done really well, and then the bigger picture stuff where I'm like, why is this happening? And it's a struggle with that promotion, especially if you're watching.
Yeah, it became a dream match promotion, in that, you know, every card had to, it became a, what match should I book for this show, and not a what match makes sense to have on this show.
Yeah.
Type of thing. It turned into kind of like a PWG type of thing where it wasn't a coherent promotion. It was just a super match.
Which is
type
funny.
Of event.
Which is funny because they were doing like this even before peak PWG by a good 4 or 5 years, which kind of makes one
right.
of Gabe's points about Dragon Gate being 10 years above or ahead of wrestling really ring true. One thing, like, talking, you mentioned Magnum a little bit, but with, like, basically out of like the four big figures of Toriumon, Mochizuki being the only one that's still around. One of the things, and this is actually a case's question, so I apologize for buying on this. Like, we look at him, like, Case and I have had conversations and arguments with people where we're like going, oh, Mochizuki is the best wrestler above the age of 50 ever, and he is still doing this. Like, so, like, we view him as a legend. We're wondering, like, within, like, the native audience and within the locker room, like, how is Misaki Mochizuki viewed, I guess, more so within Dragon Gate and within the native fan base?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, the level he performs at his age is crazy. And, obviously within the fan base, you know, he's one of the most beloved characters and wrestlers, you know, period. And that's always going to be that. People give him the utmost respect. But it's interesting to see now, because he's been going out. Like, he went to Noah you know, earlier this year and was tag champion, that they're start, that it's people that only, you know, they know that he's 50 years old, but they don't watch Dragon Gate. So they're like, is, and then he comes and, you know, does a Mochizuki match in another promotion. And people are like, wow, he can still really move for a guy that, you know, for an elderly man. So it's cool to see that he's starting to get a little bit more respect outside of Dragon Gate by going out and wrestling in these other promotions.
Are there any major disconnects between the way the Western fan base views a certain wrestler and the way the native fan base views a certain wrestler? Because I know, like, there's been discussions on Shingo and his drawing power, because I think he was someone that was always maybe more favored by the American fans. Is there anybody on the current roster that you feel like there's a big disconnect in how they're viewed?
Yeah, you guys like Hyo a lot, and I don't understand.
I love Hyo. And it's something that when, like, that class, that 2016 class came out, and he kind of was just, like, in that one match, and I think it was December 1st, 2016, where, like, he was getting to everyone's face. I was like, he's a little cocky prick, and I love that. So, yes. But I think that might be solely me. I know Case humors me a lot with that, and I gave Case a little bit of a hard time about Daya until the last few months. So I'm responsible for the Hyo thing. So that's all,
yeah,
on me.
Hyo's not that over, but as far as, like, other, let's see, I think Benkei.
How's he looked at in Japan? Because when he, you know, beat Pac for the title at World this summer, you know, Mike and I had assumed that he would be the new guy in the same vein as any of the prior aces, and he lost the title and has been kind of cycled back down the card in a way that I think is a little weird.
Yeah, you know, I think people, and you know, not just in Dragon Gate, I think generally fans in general throw the word ace around really easily. It's not, you know, that's not a title that you can easily have somebody come in and take over. You know, Yamato is going to be, is, as long as he's around, is going to be the ace of the company. The problem with Benkei is that he can't talk at all, like, to the point where people wonder if he's actually Japanese, because, like, he kind of talks like a middle schooler in terms of, like, how he puts his sentences together. He was doing a column for Weekly Pro Wrestling on their mobile site, and, like, they were, like, embarrassing. They read, like, elementary school what I did for summer vacation type of essays.
Thinking of Benkei, that would kind of make sense that he would be someone that's not necessarily the best at the written word.
Yeah, I mean, he did well as champion. I mean, I don't want to say that he had a flop reign as champion, because he had some good matches. But at the end of the day, the fans didn't come with him, because, one, I think they made a mistake in putting him up against the guys that people like. You know, they haven't beat Yamato, they haven't beat Mochizuki, they haven't beat Yoshino, as opposed to having him tear through, you know, having him beat Shimizu, since he would, you know, Shimizu's the one that turned on him and hit him over the head with a chair. Why didn't he wrestle Shimizu? You know, he beat Eita in King of Gate, but it wasn't, like, a solid win. Why didn't he beat Eita at any point down the line? So I don't think they put him in a position to succeed in terms of having the fans go along with him.
That makes sense. I mean, like, Eita, I feel like, is always this question mark of a wrestler, especially within Dragon Gate, that, like, it did kind of seem like he would do more headhunting of RED, but instead it was, okay, the people of the previous generation, like, having him go up against Yoshino, even if it was in Osaka, like, Yoshino's home prefecture, seemed like, okay. Because I remember Case and I were always talking, like, are they going to, like, take the belt off him here? Because this seems like a place where they would do it. And I definitely see, like, the people they set up against did not help facilitate any more, like, fan reaction or people going along with him.
Yeah, and, you know, it started off on a really bad foot. You know, the reaction for when RED turned on him wasn't the best, but people were willing, you know, Dragon Gate fans are willing to give anybody a chance. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, maybe he's not going to become ace, but he did come out of the, you know, he can say he's a former Dreamgate champion now, and he's Trianglegate champion. It's not like he's not like he's, you know, languishing around the mid card doing nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, he was on, he teamed with Yamato in the Twin Gate tournament. They made it to the finals, and then he became Trianglegate champion not too long after. You know, it feels like he's done nothing because there's been no shows for 3 months now, but you know, from after losing the title, it's not like he was, you know, just on the mid card, wrestling Kanda in mid card matches, which he did as champion.
Actually, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
You see, like, that was one of the things that always kind of confused me, was they had him and Chun as lone wolves, and they were allied together, and they obviously had like a little bit of a thought of, okay, these two guys are contemporaries, to the point like Merch was with the two of them, and it kind of felt like, is something going to like happen to like further elevate him? Like, is he going to start leading a unit, but instead he was facing Kanda, or he was having singles matches against Kazma, and just felt like, okay, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I think a lot of that was kind of outside of the control, because it was around that same time that Dragon came back, and Dragon coming back ended up, you know, that ended up putting forward a lot of thought of, you know, okay, well, let's get out of this deal we're in now, and let's make a new company. Let's get a new logo. Let's refresh the entire company. And if they had put a new unit together at that point, they would have had to disband it.
Right.
To do this. So I think it had a detrimental effect to Ben, because he didn't, you know, they didn't get to have the hot unit debut.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security, so you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
But
yeah, and that's like the thing, because when I like the cage match with the RED turn was so reminiscent of what first happened with Yamato, or really first happened with BB Hulk launching Dia Hearts and then Yamato launching Trog Vanguard, that like it seems like that there's like beats and steps to pick up that did not happen, but it makes total sense if you're looking at like the overall company is going like, okay, we're doing our rebrand, we're doing refreshing everything, and it's just easier for us to start this off now doing the generation war, which there's obvious reasons to do it.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure a lot of it had to do with, you know, POX availability, but in that, you know, they had to get the championship off of him at World, and if they were going to do it, they wanted to have someone, you know, have a young guy do it, and they wanted that World to be, you know, okay, the Strong Machines are Triangle Gate champions, and that, you know, Strong Machine J is the fastest guy to win a championship from his debut, and he's undefeated. And, you know, you've got Eita and Big R Shimizu are the Twin Gate champions, and now Benkei wins the Dream Gate, you know, and that it's all new generation, you know, Dragon Gate generation guys,
right,
holding championships coming out of that show. But at the same time, for Ben, like you said, it would have been better for that to have, for him, it would have been better for maybe him and Shin Skywalker to beat Eita and Big R Shimizu to win the Twin Gate there, or something like that. So you have the logical buildup. Instead, he didn't go through any adversity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he get RED turns on him, they destroy him, he comes back and then goes undefeated through King of Gate. He accepts help from Shin Skywalker when he clearly doesn't need it at that point. it doesn't make sense for him. You know, Skywalker goes whatever it was, 2-4 in King of Gate, and comes, and Ben can clearly handle RED on his own, so it didn't make much sense at that point to have it happen. So, you know, and then with Okuda coming in, you know, I know they needed to have Okuda go and be with Mochizuki Dojo for a while to learn to learn how to work the Dragon Gate style, but you know, with Okuda right there, it made all the sense in the world to have those three guys be the new, you know, have Skywalker, Benkei, Okuda and then maybe Ishida, you know, as like the new young guy unit. But, you know, what happened. And, you know, like, I don't consider Benkei's reign to be a failure and all that, but I don't think it was ever, you know, I don't think it was ever anointed that he was just going to be the ace based on that win, like a lot of people thought it would be.
Jay, I've been rewatching a lot of 2005 Dragon Gate lately. I've started with the January Corkin Hall, which I still think is one of the best shows the company has ever put on, and I've been going from there. And although you have the unfortunate departure of Milano pretty early in that year, you have BB Hulk's debut, Tozawa's debut, and the first, you know, year of Shingo's career all in this very short time. And it's really exciting to watch the youth of the company there. And I feel like we're in a similar period with Yoshioka and Skywalker and Kota and Dragon Daya. Is from the group of young guys on the roster right now, who do you think has the highest ceiling and can one day be looked at as a main eventer?
I mean, it's Skywalker. As long as he's got a lot of charisma and he can talk, the knock against him right now is that he's got goofy charisma where you can't really take him seriously.
Oh, the Shimizu problem.
Shimizu's different.
Yes, he is.
Shimizu has more of the Takashi charisma, in that he's funny like a clown.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Skywalker, I think he needs to come back and lose his mask, and, you know, because he's not a bad looking guy. And then once he loses the mask, I think he's the best candidate. As long as he can stay healthy, he'll be the best candidate to take over in probably not next year, but maybe the year after.
Go ahead.
And then beyond that, I think all the other guys have one or two major issues that they, like Mino Ura. I like Mino Ura a lot, but like when he talks, he just comes off as a total moron. And so that's why, you know, he was doing the Prime Zone hosting thing to try and give him a little bit more confidence and build a little bit more character, you know, as a promo. But Prime Zone has been canceled for 4 months, so that plan hasn't exactly, you know, had a chance to work out for him yet. I like Yoshioka a lot as well. He's good looking, he can talk, so I think if he can bulk up a little bit, he's got potential to be another guy that can not necessarily be the guy, but he can be a main event guy.
He's definitely someone that I know that Case and I have kind of called him this. He is kind of reminiscent in a lot of ways, and the role that I kind of put him in is very similar to Susumu in certain ways. Like, at least, like, he is one of the more, like, consistent people there, at least entering, and you would know more about, like, his ability to talk and like this, but it does seem like him getting, like, doing this excursion now. I mean, sadly, it's now, but, like, him coming back, I could definitely kind of see him in, like, a Susumu Yokosuka sort of role.
Yeah, I hope it's a little more than that. No knock against Susumu. Obviously, Susumu is one of the greatest ever. But I guess if they bring him and Skywalker back together, you can kind of redo the Susumu and Kanda thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I see a lot of potential in him. He reminds me a lot of like Dynamite Kid or Black Tiger era Eddie Guerrero in terms of his wrestling style.
I didn't put those two together before that, but I could definitely see it. Like, that there is certain similarities with like ring style and like just the way they move that does kind of feel like Black Tiger 2, Eddie Guerrero. Now you mention that.
Yeah, he's got kind of like, and a lot of people, like the Japanese people, will say he's got like a Showa era face. Like, he's got like the Showa era matinee idol good looks. So everything about him is kind of throwback. I haven't really talked to him to see what his influences or his, you know, what his inspirations were, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was, he's a little bit older than the other guys from that class, so he might have a little bit more interest in like mid-90s New Japan.
I could see that. Speaking about this and how like the crowds respond to this. Has this at all started to be reflected upon like show attendance or with, I've noticed like I'm someone that I will watch Kyoto shows and Kobe Sambo Hall shows before this and really kind of listen to, okay, who's the crowd doing calls for? Like, is this at all like representing like how the show attendance is, or is this something that I know with the company that there's like generational changes within the fan base? Like, does it seem like that? I've always noticed that Yoshioka was someone who got a lot of calls, even the rookie ranking tournament. Is that starting to be reflected at all within like attendance and with like crowd and within like fan engagement?
Yeah. Attendance has been, you know, there was the down period in 2018, obviously, after those guys left, and a lot of it, you know, that was reflected a lot more on the bigger shows, because to remember in Dragon Gate, in Japan in general, not just Dragon Gate, but speaking from the Dragon Gate perspective, that a lot of ticket sales are mostly hand to hand, in that, you know, wrestlers selling them to either sponsors or selling them directly to fans. And with, you know, the owner in particular, with the owner leaving, you know, the owner's personal connections and all the tickets that he would hand out, and then the top name leaving and all the tickets that he would sell individually, you know, just to his personal, you know, to his sponsors and to his fans, losing that alone is a massive hit. And then you combine that with the fact that the company just was not, you know, had gone into a creative slump, starting with, you know, around the time the Jimmies were disbanded and everything that was going on around that, when there was starting to be that stagnation kicking in. But around the time that Pac came back and RED formed, things started to pick back up. There was I guess it would have been in December 2018, around the time that Pac came back, there was a show in Shizuoka that was like super depressing. There was only like 120 people there, or something like that. I don't remember the exact number. But then, you know, the rookie ranking tournament happened, and the young guys were getting the push, and things were starting to come together a little bit. And by the time they came back to Shizuoka again in March, like, the place was sold out. So it was cool to see. I mean, there's still, you know, Korakuen is still pretty much sold out every month. The attendances in Kobe and, you know, in Sambo Hall and in KBS Hall are doing a little bit better. Now, you know, house shows can be hit and miss, but there's an enthusiasm now. Unfortunately, we really didn't have a lot of time to see how the three-way generation war was hashing out, because we only got about 6 weeks of shows out of that.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of time for people to pick sides. But Dragon Daya is getting popular. Yoshioka was popular. Ishida was super popular before he joined RED.
I remember noticing, you know, Ishida, that was insane, especially during the ranking tournament, his calls.
Yeah, you know, he was getting insanely popular before he turned. Now, I mean, now people, you know, people still like him now. And the thing about Japan is, you know, turning heel doesn't necessarily negate your fan base. It just means that, you know, your fans have to buy merch for a different unit, which is, you know, how you make your money. So really those guys, I mean, Dragon Daya especially, you know, there's the half that are tired of the super push, but then there's the other half, which are like, wow, this guy's crazy. This guy, you know, it's amazing how much he's leveled up over the last couple months. And, you know, he can beat Kanda regularly, he can beat Kagetora regularly. And it's really important for there to be another small guy in a dragon mask that can be inspirational to kids. And I'm glad that it's starting to pay off this quickly.
Yeah, that was like one of my initial things. And this was something that Case and I would go back and forth with on, like, the idea of having the heir to Dragon Kid, who was the heir to Ultimo, like having the smaller guy in the mask, like, that is such an important thing. And I'm really glad how he's taken off, especially really since he was able to kind of get over his, I knew he had real bad influenza and then he was injured a little bit, but like him putting it together basically, like, my confidence in, like, okay, this is going the right direction is completely, I'm completely comfortable with it. And I think he's someone that the more that I've seen him, I'm more like, if this MLW thing ever works out, I'm hoping he's one of the guys to come over here, because this guy, even though he's like super small, could be insane. And I think Western fans would pick up on it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I was talking, this would have been actually the same conversation with Horiguchi, where I was talking about the Torimon reunion show, and we were talking about some of the different guys, like, you know, like Ishimori and Sugi, and, you know, the guys that were considered the super athletic, or the, you know, the spectacular guys from that time. And I think Lenny was showing him clips of who's the guy from AAA that does all the crazy stuff?
Vikingo.
Vikingo, yeah. He was showing him clips of that, and Horiguchi just looks at it and says, Daya can do all of that.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, who knows what else he still has to show. I mean, obviously he has to take the Dragon Rana at some point.
Right.
Or maybe like a springboard Dragon Rana or something like that. So it feels like, based on the expectations behind him, we've only, you know, it's the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, in terms of what he can do. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, hopefully there is still wrestling.
Yeah, it's something that, like, I do a lot of stuff following with, like, AEW and how it's done there. Like, it's, you know, with, like, the situations going on around here, it's something that everyone's kind of, like, sitting on hands, being like, well, they have to make TV. And whereas Dragon Gate, it's like, well, I know that something needs to be aired on Gaora, but we're going to try to do this in a way that, at least for the two Empty Arena shows that I saw, that I thought that it was incredibly interesting how it felt more like a big, like, territory wrestling studio show, more so than anything else I saw in the States.
Yeah, the first one especially was really well done. The second one was also good, but it had the atmosphere was a little bit different. In at least in the arena, it felt a little bit more grim.
Sure,
because it was like, we know that this is the last time that we're all going to be getting together for the near future, mm-hmm. type of thing. Larry didn't handle it very well. you know, from his perspective, you know, he's worked, you know, Larry's worked so hard to get back here, and sure. now to lose it from something that's totally out of his control. You know, Larry, I know you're going to listen to this, so we love you. Keep your head up. We'll see you again soon. Don't worry about it. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, none of the promotions in Japan are safe right now. You know, New Japan is losing a fuck ton of money every month. You know, I mean, people think that, you know, the Bushiroad and Cyber Agent companies are safe, but, like, Stardom and New Japan are losing a lot of money. DDT loses $500,000 every year when they're running shows. Noah had to be purchased because they weren't profitable. And then you've got the other indies, you know, like Michinoku Pro going on their Twitter saying, we can't pay salary this month. Please buy stuff off our online shop. And guys like, I think the tweet got deleted, but it was on their official Twitter. And guys like Onryo, who runs 666, saying, you know, we have to keep going because if we stop, we die.
Yeah, that was something I noticed, like, with Big Japan, that was, like, a big, at least Western conversation, was since they were going, everyone's like, oh, they have to, or they're done.
Yeah, Big Japan's in a lot of trouble. I mean, they had to crowdfund to get their bus fixed. And just continuing to do shows into, you know, forcing their way to doing those Hokkaido shows, they took a really big hit reputation-wise. So, like, Big Japan has kind of fallen down into that, like, group with, like, 0-1 of low reputation groups now, to where they're probably going to lose fans just because they did it.
Just for something that I've been asked, and I felt like I got a little bit of a handle on this, without getting, like, I know there's certain things that are way above your pay grade, within, like, when the regime change happened, I know that it was, like, mentioned that Gaora was more involved, and Gaora is owned by, like, MBS and, like, things like this. Is that what we're looking at as, like, the ownership situation currently in the company, or is it still kind of...
The Dragon Gate is owned by Dragon Gate. I mean, okay. It's an independent company, but Gaora does the... I mean, they've got the TV contract, and that's where a lot of the money comes from.
Okay,
it handles all the production side stuff is handled by Gaara.
Yeah, it was something that like I remember hearing, and then like looking up, and like I saw like ownership Gaara a long time ago, and I know through like talking with you with the situation with previous regime being sole owner, and I guess now it's more collaboratively owned by the company, so that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, Gaara handles all the production costs, and the production cost is such a huge chunk that, you know, if they had to handle production costs individually, it would, you know, the company would not necessarily be sustainable on the business model that they're on. And, Gaara is a TV channel that their lifeblood is baseball, and they're doing baseball. Right now, you know, they had like 4 hours of drone racing on in their baseball slot the other day. That's not okay. And like their the Gaara president had put out an edict in towards the end of it would have been, I guess, middle of March, because if you remember the Wrestle One show from the Otaku Wrestle One show,
right,
ended up not being aired because Gaara said, we're not sending any production people to anything that has fans. So
that,
like,
completely, yeah.
Yeah, like we were going to do, at the time, this would have been March 22nd, the Kobe Samba Hall on March 22nd, because this is when we were still kind of running under the idea that we would be able to run Cork and Hall on April 8th. We were talking with the Gaara people, and, you know, the Gaara people, the production people wanted to do it, but the Gaara president was like, absolutely not. If there's going to be fans, we're not sending people there. So it was kind of an issue. I mean, the show ended up being canceled, so it wasn't an issue, but.
Well, when there are fans in the building, who is making up the current Dragon Gate fan base demographic?
It's a mix. I mean, obviously it's still going to be mostly women. It's still a lot of families though. And, basically it works like this, you know, Dragon Gate kind of has a reputation of being the cat lady promotion, which fair or unfair probably is pretty accurate.
I mean, I've watched enough shows at Kobe Lapis Hall to say like, that is a lot of it, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's like people kind of compare it to like, okay, like then you go to a Joshi show, and Joshi show is all, you know, like creepy middle-aged guys, right? Mm-hmm. And people say, okay, well, you know, what's the difference? And just by virtue of having the reputation of being a place where there's a lot of females are congregating, that means male fans are going to be more likely to come, and other females are more, you know, they'll feel more comfortable coming. So you get, you know, you get the cat ladies, but then you also get the families, like the girls that have been Dragon Gate fans for years that are now married and have kids. They still come to shows. You also get a lot of younger, maybe late 20s, early 30s, regular salarymen.
Really?
A lot of them will come in kind of groups. Especially in the orange seats when I'm there as a fan, where I sit, there's usually like this huge row behind me of guys that will do that do like real time commentary themselves. Like super, super loud, but like they're super like super educated though, like where they call the moves and say, oh, this, you know, that's the such and such. And then there'll be like usually a lapsed fan with them that says, oh, wow, he can still do that. That type of thing. So it's not just like they're not surviving on the cat lady audience. I think it's much more diverse now than it maybe would have been during the like the contracted periods, you know, when like the fan when it's down, like in 2018 it was mostly cat ladies. Mm-hmm. But then once it starts to get interesting again, the cat ladies either bring, you know, the girls either start bringing dates, or there's just people that come to check it out and stay. And there's also, I mean, I can't discount the fact that, you know, in 2018, there were a lot of freebies being passed, you know, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of papering done on certain shows just to get people to come in and get eyes on it, but it's paid off.
I know the Gaijins that have been over there have talked a lot about how Dragon Gate is really a family of a promotion, and people set the ring up and they tear the ring down, and wrestlers are selling merch, you know, during and after the show.
Oh yeah.
Is that still the case? You know, does everybody have to put the ring up, or is someone like Fuji or Mochizuki like, nah, I'm good?
Oh no, they're out there. I mean, Benkei, when he's champion, is out there tearing the ring down, loading it in the truck. I mean, everybody is, the heels don't. So if you're a heel, you don't have to do that stuff.
Yeah, I remember that being such a big deal when Doi turned, that he was finally doing autographs after the show, because you don't go out there when you're a heel.
Exactly, yeah. So everybody chips in, I mean, from the top all the way to the bottom. I mean, you know, President Kido is out there at every show selling tickets by hand. You know, he's the one that works the ticket table along with Mori. So there is nobody in the organization that doesn't chip in during a show.
Is it still a case, I remember it being the big deal that Hulk did a lot of the graphic design. Like, is it something that you still see? Like, Hulk was the person who did the design for Mad Blanky. Like, is it more individualized there, or some was just more just everyone together, like saying, "Hey, this looks cool. It goes with this."
Hulk does a lot of self-production. Like if he's involved with something, he'll do a lot of the design for it. Mm-hmm. If you look at right around the time the show started getting canceled, there was a huge wave of new merchandise up on the online store, which is, just to get off topic real quick, if you are a fan of a promotion right now, the way to support them is to either buy stuff or subscribe to their network. So not just Dragon Gate. If you're a fan of any sort of other wrestling promotion, you know, if you can afford it, chip in and, you know, do something to throw some money their way. So in Japan, a lot of it right now is doing the online, you know, the online store business is super important. And there was a huge slew of new RED stuff that was all Hulk drawn.
Really? But then, I'll check that out.
Yeah. KZ also does a lot of stuff. So there was some for the Dragon Gate generation. I think there were like these buttons that were all done by KZ. And then Ryo Saito came in with some like horribly drawn stuff for the Toriumon generation, but it was more of a gag.
Yeah, I remember, like, was it Susumu as a horse was one of them, or
he's an eggplant.
Okay,
Susumu's an eggplant. That's the joke. Also, Mr. Nakazawa from Dragon Gate Records, he's generally responsible for a lot of the visual direction of the company. Like a lot of like unit logos that mm-hmm. aren't done by someone individual within the group, it'll be Mr. Nakazawa that does it. And he also does all of the layouts for programs and CD packaging and all of that.
So I have two very quick nerdy questions that I know last time we talked, I had to ask you about Koji Shishido, because that was something that always, he was someone that always caught my eye. One of my nerdy questions.
Okay.
What's the deal with the Bulls baseball team that they always do an exhibition baseball game with? Like, I know Yoshino, of course, baseball, big baseball guy, but who also in DG, like when they go out and does it, is a surprisingly good baseball player.
In the first one, it was Yamamura. Like Yamamura got hurt, but Yamamura was a star baseball player at the time. Yamato gets a lot of shit for being exceptionally bad at baseball.
Well, you can't be great at everything.
Yeah. But I mean, that whole thing is basically just, you know, Yoshino is a huge baseball fan, and that's like the local, you know, that's like the local all-star team of alumni. So, you know, it's like a charity. They do it for charity.
Oh, that's really cool. Okay. So you brought Mr. Nakazawa, Dragon Gate Records. I know with some of the guys have the links all the way back to FNW, and I've noticed that he's someone that always like posts like Hayabusa masks, and especially on anniversaries like this. Was he someone who was also involved in FNW that came over with them when a lot of them did, and with Toriumon?
No, he came in. He was the sound guy for. Oh, what was it? So the original sound guy was. God, I don't remember this off the top of my head. But no, he wasn't in FMW. He was just someone that became good friends with Hayabusa later. You okay. Remember Hayabusa came in as like an ambassador
right.
type of deal with Dragon Gate. And I think that was, there were musician ties there because Hayabusa was doing his music career at the time. So they became very, very close friends around that time. But Nakazawa came to Dragon Gate in 2003 was when he officially joined.
Okay.
let me think, around the time that, no, because he was around for T2P. I think I have my timing wrong. He was there before, but then like officially joined in 2003. And it was around the time they switched over to starting to do in-house themes, would have been the time that he officially became like a full-time Torimon guy.
Oh, that okay.
Because before that, you know, they were just using, you know, like the Budokan Hall show, the 2003 Budokan Hall show, where they was like kind of the demarcation point. That was the last big show where they were using like licensed music. And mm-hmm. then starting with the Yoyogi show that year is when they started switching over to using in-house music.
That's something I've always kind of wondered, but especially like with like the Torimon reunion, you can't have M2K theme play.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big thing. Like that's, we're not gonna, if there's for the next one, we're not going to be able to do it on the network because it's not worth it because of all of the muting that we have to do. You have to constantly hit the button. So it's not, we can do it on Gaoro because you can play the music, but we're not going to be able to do it as a network show.
I will admit, I did try to seek out and I did find the Gaoro so I could see the full M2K entrance with the theme, just because like I have to experience that, you know.
All the TV from like all of the celebration matches from last year to like the 20th anniversary mm-hmm. matches, it's worth tracking down the Gaoro versions to get the entrance music.
So absolutely. I have one last question, and I think we'll bring this in for a landing. Speaking of like the anniversary celebration, were there any guys that you were hoping to make an appearance that sadly weren't a part of it? Like, I'm someone that was always a big Taku Iwasa fan. I know he's completely done now, but I was like, oh, they were doing Florida Brothers. It would have been great to see Iwasa participate somehow. Was there anyone that you missed out on?
Yeah, I was hoping that Iwasa would come in too. I mean, I expected it to be as Michael, mm-hmm. and just to be, you know, a total no contact comedy match, because there was, like, they made the offer to him, and he went back in the gym, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, geez, who didn't show up? I mean, like, Ishimori considers Torimon to be like a black, you know, a black mark on his history, so he's not going to show up on anything. Sugi, I mean, he can't show up. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, Sua, you know, Sua thankfully is alive, but like Sua is not, you know, physically not in good shape, so he can't. I mean, he can't even make an appearance.
Yeah.
Magnum has been out of wrestling for 10 years now, and you know, he probably can't come back.
I saw a photo of Magnum a bit back in it. Talk about 2006, him looking a little pudgy. I saw the photo of him, like, yeah, leave the memories alone, Magnum.
Yeah, he's got his dojo, and you know, he's doing well. You know, Taru ended up coming back on the reunion show. I was surprised at mm-hmm. that, actually. I didn't know Taru would be there until the day of the show. And gosh, I mean, no, that's really it. I mean, there's nobody else worthwhile. I mean, Milano came back. Obviously, Milano wasn't going to come back for a match.
Right.
Fukumasa can't come back for a match. And really, the Torimon X guys, let's see, like the Brahmin twins won't come back. Like, they don't, they're still a grudge there. Jeez, who else?
Yeah, I guess like the one I was really hoping for, and of course, like you brought up was Iwasa, and it's a shame like that he's someone that when people ask me about folks to check out that they might not have caught him, like, go watch some Araiwa matches. That was like a really big time for me.
That 2006-2009 period, you know, up until he got hurt. I mean, he was one of the best in the company mm-hmm. at the time. It's too bad. Yeah. Gosh, I'm still trying to think of other names. Like Tajima, Hisamaru came back. I mean,
Hisamaru was a surprise. That was, I was like, I thought.
Yeah, he's so fat. Like, we were, I was like stunned, but I guess he ran an udon shop for the longest time, but now he does sushi, and he does like a traveling sushi exhibition. Like he goes around to the different department stores and sells his stuff. And I guess he's living and eating good.
Hey,
and
I mean,
that's what he said. He got super fat. I mean, that was always that was always Hisamaru's thing though. He was like, the son of a rich father. Mm-hmm. Like his father was like super rich. And, this is totally off track here. We're talking about people that don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about Hisamaru Tajima. He was the first and only scholarship student to the Ultimo Dragon Gym. Story behind Tajima is, as the legend, as it were, Tajima was, Ultimo Dragon saw him and saw so much potential in him, he gave him a scholarship. The real story is, one of Ultimo Dragon's friends was friends with Tajima's father, and Tajima's father was rich, but he's like, can you please do something with my no good son? And Dragon said, okay, fine. As a favor to you, I'll bring him over to here and we can turn him into a wrestler. But he would go there and he would make a lot of mistakes. And like Suwa would call him long distance from Japan to berate him until he finally gave up and quit and went into the noodle business.
I mean, if Suwa was going to call me and yell at me, I would do immediately what he would ask of me. Like, that's
long
terrifying.
Long distance. I mean, that's not a cheap call. But anyway. But if go back and watch the Toriumon reunion show, he was the big fat guy in the yellow costume in the Battle Royal. But he came back in 2006 briefly and wrestled. He wrestled for Tradition and on any of the Ultimo Dragon produced shows and before retiring again, but he came out of retirement to do this show. And he was a name I never expected to see wrestle again, much less be able to call one of his matches.
Well, unless Casey, you have anything else, I think we're going to call this here. Jay, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. This was an absolute blast.
No, anytime. Feel free to invite me anytime. I'm just bored and fat like everybody else right now, so
I think I'm one of the few people who's willing to be like, all right, let's talk about Taku Owasa, like, and what's the deal with the Bulls baseball team. And I know Case was chomping at the bit to get a chance to talk to you for a bit, so we really appreciate it, Jay.
Yeah, anytime.
And
anything else,
Case, you got any last pressing questions or something that's
No, this was a fascinating hour for me. I got to listen and have a lot of questions answered that I had for a long time. So, Jay, thank you for coming on and doing this. This was a blast.
No problem. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Anything you want to plug before we close this up?
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, if you're listening to this, you're probably a big Dragon Gate fan already. So you're probably already following, but if you're not, please follow the official Dragon Gate social media accounts. That's at Dragon Gate EN, at Dragon Gate English. We're on Twitter and we're on Facebook. You can follow, let's see, what else? Subscribe to the Dragon Gate Network if you haven't. That's DragonGate.live. Right now, they are working on backfilling the Big Show archives. Working on I believe it's Dead or Alive right now. They're back working their way backwards to the first one. I think as long as this pandemic is going on and there's no new content, they'll be backfilling. They'll probably do Dangerous Gate next. Let's see. Be sure to follow Larry Dallas on Twitter.
Please.
The lead broadcaster of the English commentary team. Also follow Lenny Leonard. He is the lead play-by-play guy. When he's the color guy, you can follow me at what is my Twitter at DG_J, spelled JAE. I am the replacement player on the English commentary team. I also will put up have an episode like episode guide to Toriumon, or if anything from the archive is added, usually I'll say what you should watch from it, or if there's anything that needs to have context added, I'll add on that. Otherwise, I don't post all that much. And yeah, that's about it.
All right, so you could follow me on Twitter at Fujihei. You can follow Case at _inyourcase, and the Twitter account of the show is at Open Voice Gay. We're trying to tweet as much as we can. I know that Case was tweeting through the Mochizuki contra Mochizuki match, and I was tweeting through the Darkness Dragon versus DK Apuestas match on there as well. But until next time, guys, take care. Wash your hands.
Be safe, everyone.